Hello and welcome to watching Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vedant Agarwal. Well, our big focus on the show this evening. Well, a political war over the Maharashtra government exchequer on the eve of the key elections. Well, what's interesting is that the Maharashtra coffers are virtually empty right ahead of the key elections. And there is, of course, a huge political war of words between the Mahayuti and the Mahavikas Aghadi over it as well. But this points to a larger issue. Is it time to teach our netas fiscal prudence, given the fact that we see this sort of heavy reliance as far as welfare schemes are concerned? If you look at Maharashtra's financial health, there's a clear decline from the fiscal surplus to a fiscal deficit state, and that too at an extremely alarming rate. Maharashtra could become one of the six Indian states to record contraction in capital expenditure as well. And this, of course, after there's a decline in the growth rate as well, from over 10% in financial year 23 to 5% in 2025. All of this despite Maharashtra having a high per capita income, in fact, higher than most North Indian states as well. There's a 5x increase in Maharashtra's revenue deficit in just a single year. Economists say that this is largely because of some sort of an imbalance as far as our budgetary allocations are concerned, and its year-on-year analysis in terms of what to allocate to welfare schemes and what to allocate to sustained capital growth. On the show this evening, we ask the Maha War over Maha Coffers. Is India's financial capital's fiscal health at risk? Joining me on the show this evening, well, I'll be joined by Neerja Chaudhary, senior journalist. Also, Amitabh Tiwari, political strategist, is with us. Subhash Garg, the former finance secretary, is also with us on the show this evening. Professor Santosh Mehrotra, senior economist and visiting professor at Centre for Development, University of Bath, the UK, is also with us. Thanks, gentlemen, for being with us. Of course, this is as we wait Neerja ji to join us as well. But going across to you first, Mr. Garg, as somebody who has worked very, very closely with the administration, with governments at both at the state level and at the central level, do you see some sort of a paradigm shift in terms of almost complete reliance on welfare schemes, on poll doles, on freebies, as it were, and very little reliance on the system itself and its delivery?
So, Vedant, let's not be alarmist. Fiscal deficit of Maharashtra has always been and is still less than 3% of GSDP, which is the benchmark for these states for many years. There is little deterioration in last couple of years. It used to be about 2.2, 2.3, and last year I think it's about 2.8%. So there is some deterioration, but it's not crossed the Lakshman Rekha 3%. That's one. Second, what you asked me basically, the welfare spending has been the state's preferred mode of expenditure, and the capital expenditure in some of the pet projects like irrigation, electricity, and a couple of other things, that has been the state's primary mode of expenditure. There is one paradigm shift which I am seeing now for last couple of years, and that is that the welfare spending in the form of investment in health, education, employment, wage schemes like Narega. In fact, Maharashtra was the state which actually started the employment guarantee scheme, so to say. It was a pioneer. It was also a pioneer in the watershed scheme, which has now gone into all over the country. That kind of welfare spending or redistribution or investment in people and the human capital is now getting replaced increasingly, not only in Maharashtra, in some other states as well, by cash handouts. Ladli Behen Yojana or the bus fares or otherwise, many schemes which now are being announced at a very rapid pace and speed, and Maharashtra has jumped the gun on this issue in August after the Lok Sabha elections following Madhya Pradesh model or something. So that shift is clearly visible, but I don't think still we are, and this will have impact on the expenditure which otherwise was being incurred on capital expenditure or on those socially desirable scheme, because you will not be crossing the 3% limit.
Right.
And therefore, these schemes will see the lesser expenditure.
So that's an interesting point you're making. That's an interesting point, because you're saying that the shift is not in terms of reliance on freebies or reliance on welfare schemes, but the shift in terms of DBTs or direct benefit transfers or targeted cash transfers. That seems to have become the norm now. And Amitabh Tiwari, come in on this, because the political ramifications of this is also something that we have seen, and it's been fascinating. The BJP's Labharti model, as it were, that has clearly worked in state-level elections as well, and of course in the Lok Sabha as well. And now, of course, you have all parties sort of jumping onto the same bandwagon, because, I mean, if you look at Maharashtra and the MVA manifesto and the Mahayuti manifesto, it almost looks like, you know, they're the same, given the fact that both of them have, DBTs, loan waiver, something similar to a Ladki Behen Yojana in the MVA manifesto as well. So, you know, decode it for us as to why this becomes important politically, this entire Labharti model.
No, see, essentially what happens is that a cash transfer scheme results in an immediate beneficiary and there are no leakages. So while in an Ayushman Bharat scheme, if you are enrolled, you are just a cardholder. Unless you unfortunately fall sick and go to a hospital, you do not become a beneficiary. Whereas in a Ladli Behen scheme, the moment the amount is transferred in your account, you are a beneficiary. The state governments as well as people like it, because people perceive that there is rampant corruption in government schemes. And if it were to spend a similar amount on capex or other schemes, there would be significant leakage. So at least there is no leakage here, and the people like that fact. And of course, getting cash in their accounts. Now, what is complicated the matters is that in a post-GST era, the ability of state governments to raise revenues has declined. There are only 3-4 products now on which the state governments can raise taxes: fuel, real estate, auto, and alcohol. So their ability to raise revenues is reducing. Their expenditures are increasing because they are going in for these cash income support schemes. If the expenditures are not increasing, as you are showing, because of the increase in revenue expenditure, your capital expenditure is declining. So growth is not happening. Because of that, your GDP growth rate is falling from 10.5% to 5%. Maharashtra became one of the states where there is a contraction in capital expenditure. So it is a vicious cycle. And what we have seen in Karnataka is that initially in the first 1 or 2 years, it does not have a significant impact, but later on, it has an impact because the state government is not able to meet that additional Ladli Behen dole out to revenues. They have to take additional loans for that, and that increases your debt to GSDP ratio
exactly.
In the future.
And ultimately, it's a taxpayer which is it. And I'll come to that. But Neerja ji, since you're also with us, as we've discussed this multiple times over in the past as well, that because the system is not delivering, we see this kind of heavy reliance on welfare schemes. But the kind of political resonance that these welfare schemes find on the ground is absolutely incredible. I mean, if you travel to places in Uttar Pradesh, people would still tell you something like Indira Awas Yojana. People would say, humko Indira ji ne land diya hai. Or, you know, in Maharashtra, people would say, Shinde Dada humko, you know, the Ladki Behen Yojana, for example. The kind of political resonance that these welfare schemes that come at a huge cost to the government exchequer have found is absolutely, you know, is a story in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's why I hate to call them freebies. Because, you know, as I keep saying, if the system, the development model is not delivering as people expect it to deliver, things are not coming into their hands, or things are not coming to them as per their aspirations, which are rising. And also, you know, dependent on what they want to do. Therefore, whatever you give them at election time, they feel this is the time to get something in hand, and why not? And many of them will vote the way they want to. It's not necessary that they will vote for the person giving the money. But, and this is a big but, I saw this with women. And women as a constituency, if you give money in their hands, and this time this Ladki Behna Yojana, I went to Marathwada, and I went to the villages, and there, talking to Dalit women, OBC women, Maratha women, they are so excited.
Hmm.
You know, they've already put the money and, you know, I didn't meet one single woman, and this is very random and it's very anecdotal, who had not got 7,500 in her bank account. 5 months had come to them. And they had, kisi ne vegetable cart kharida, kisi ne Surat se saariyan mangwai, they're selling it door to door, ladies are augmenting their income. It is their money. And they talk about Eknath Shinde, the chief minister. They don't talk about the Mahayuti having
exactly
to them, or the BJP or the Sharad
Pawar. It becomes synonymous with the leader. It almost becomes synonymous with the leader, as it was, you know, as it was with Mr. Modi, Mr. Shinde in Maharashtra, you know, Shivraj Singh Chauhan in Madhya Pradesh. You know, these schemes become synonymous with the leader.
No, absolutely. They become synonymous with the leader and they feel he will do more. Of course, he's made this statement today in the newspaper, but he says that, you know, I'm going to continue with the schemes, but giving money in the hands, you know, I cannot, meaning I'm not going to compete, say, with the Congress, which has promised 3,000 rupees. So there is a financial crunch. This is the poorer women I'm talking about. The more educated among the women talk about the financial viability. They question whether the scheme will continue. Continue after the election, where is the money going to come from? Will the ICDS salaries be cut as a result? Somewhere the cut is going to come. And is it fiscally prudent? So all those questions are also being raised. As far as the poorer women are concerned, they say, I don't care where my husband voted or votes. We voted the Congress last time. I am going to vote for Eknath Shinde. Let my husband vote for the Congress party. So there is a lot of change that is coming. So it is not, we cannot say that these schemes are not financially or otherwise empowering. I think we have to look deeper into this.
And perhaps that's what makes it such a complex debate. Professor Malhotra, you've been listening to, you know, your co-panelists with some sort of cynicism, I see. But, you know, this is an age-old debate. Are these welfare schemes or freebies good economics or bad economics? There's no simple answer to that.
They're obviously good economics from the point of view of the individual household, and I can in some ways understand that. The reason why one can understand that is particularly for two reasons. One is that prices have been systematically very high, especially in the last 3 years. Food inflation has been very high, and like you probably know that the food inflation hit last month 9 to 10% when the overall CPI had risen above the 6% maximum threshold that the RBI MPC has laid out. So that's one reason. The other reason is, of course, the fact that families are not enjoying the benefits of non-farm jobs. Families would prefer to have non-farm jobs, but the fact is that non-farm jobs are not growing. And in the presence of inflation, well, when you hand them cash, it makes them very happy. Which takes us back to the issue that I think Mr. Tiwari, Mr. Garg, everyone, and Mirja Ji have also raised, which is that we already have PM Kisan already in place. So since 2019, this government, this government, essentially, the central government changed the model of winning elections. They decided PM Kisan was needed just before the 2019 elections, and they did very well in 2019 elections. And after that, in every state government, you know, state governments have started doing this. What is the cost of this? I think our panelists have mentioned capital expenditure. I think there are other costs as well. Let's just keep those in mind. One clear cost is that governments, in the absence, in the presence of GST, having reduced their sources of funding, are spending less on health, on education. But generally, it's not just that they're spending less on capital expenditure. The fact of the matter is that it may well be that this does not matter to ordinary people. Mm. What matters to ordinary people is, in the face of inflation and joblessness, that they get cash handouts. But it does also matter to people that Anganwadi salaries have been, Anganwadi worker salaries have been 3,000 rupees forever and ever.
Exactly.
It does matter to people, the midday meal scheme for children, that receives less money. So, you know, as very simple, money doesn't grow on trees. So when you hand out cash like this, there are costs to be paid. Ultimately, you know, governments will decide on the basis of vote get, you know, of their ability to fetch vote.
Yes, I think
is that in the interest, long term interest. See, Vedant, the last point, last sentence. Ultimately, the government of the day, its job is, in a country where the human capital level is extremely poor, when, you know, China is losing investors, we are not the ones who are getting it. They are going somewhere else. Mm. Why are we not getting them? Because our human capital level is appalling.
Okay.
Has been so. We are not willing to invest in the long-term development.
Yes.
We want to give cash handouts and remain in power.
Well, good luck. Said earlier also, Professor Malhotra, that perhaps the BJP and Modi's BJP has changed the entire model of winning elections, but also on the implementation of these schemes. And Mr. Garg coming in on this, because a lot of times we do see that the implementation matter, you know, sort of also depends a great deal on the fiscal cooperation between the center and the state. If it's a BJP-ruled state, it becomes easier. And in opposition-ruled states, like, say, in Karnataka, it's a more difficult task. And that sort of fiscal cooperation between the state and the center has almost broken down.
So you have made two points. Number one is the implementation, and the second one is the fiscal cooperation. So in terms of implementation, various things which the governments do, and ultimately every government expenditure is meant to serve people either way. In terms of implementation, also the cash handouts or the freebies are slightly different, in the sense that you give a free or subsidized food, then it's a freebie. When you give a free cash, then it's a cash handout. So both the kind of things, the freebies and the cash handouts, in terms of implementation, the cash handouts is most efficient and delivers almost entire thing. Of course, there may be corruption even in this case, but it's much less than the corruption involved in the food, subsidized food schemes or the capital expenditure and all. And translating that, for example, human capital investment through education investments.
Sure.
Now you employ teachers and the teachers don't teach, or they teach well and then they don't do it. So that investment in human capital through that medium is far less efficient and effective than what the cash handouts, the freebies achieve. And this establishes, as was the point made earlier, a very direct connection between the politicians and the voter, and therefore its vote effectiveness or election effectiveness is also much, much sharper.
Absolutely.
Now, about this central fiscal cooperation kind of thing, most of our schemes of fiscal devolution to these states are not honestly linked to whether a state is ruled by the opposition or the ruling party in the center. the tax devolution is agnostic of the party in power at different states. So I don't think that makes too much of a difference, except I need to make this point that central government in last few years have been very particular in making states concede and convey that it is the center's money which is coming up, which creates some problem for the some of the opposition states, and they don't want to give you that credit, and they also share a large part of that cost. Except that friction, I don't think there is any difference as far as the implementation of freebies and the cash handout schemes are concerned, depending upon who is ruling the state.
All right. Neeraj, perhaps the last word to you. As you know, we discussed, particularly in the context of Maharashtra, you know, the entire caste arithmetic also becomes extremely crucial, and identifying the real beneficiaries of these schemes, that perhaps is also important. And ever since perhaps the focus on, say, the backward caste in terms of caste consolidation, in terms of that sort of outreach that we are seeing in states like Maharashtra, welfare schemes have become even more important.
Are you asking me this?
Yes, Neeraji, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, there is a caste lineup taking place. The backward OBCs consolidating behind the BJP. Ironically, even though the MVA has been flagging the caste census and therefore underlining, you know, winning over OBCs. But the OBCs are largely with the BJP and the Mahayuti. And the old axis between the Marathas, Muslims and Dalits, which was a winning combination for the Congress Party and the NCP in the past and also in the Lok Sabha election, they are planning, you know, they're hoping that that's not going to get dented. Manoj Jharange Patil's step to withdraw his candidates from the race is expected to help consolidate Marathas behind the MVA in Marathwada and Western Maharashtra. But the important question is, will the Dalits stay with the MVA to the extent to which they had swung to its side in the Lok Sabha elections, or will that support be dented? But if I was to oversimplify this, it is caste nexus on this side and the Mahayuti making a bid again for Hindu consolidation, whether it's through Batenge Katenge, Saath Hai to Safe Hai of the Prime Minister. But it is the women's constituency.
Yes, absolutely.
That is going to be the game changer. The extent to which women swing to the Mahayuti will, I think, determine the ultimate numbers.
Amitabh Tiwari, the last word to you. You know, how do you see this? Is this now the model going forward politically, something that the BJP seems to have mastered a great deal, and now, of course, the other parties playing catch-up?
No, essentially, if you see, if the Mahayuti wins this election, then it will be the second election after Madhya Pradesh, which they've been, despite not being the favorites to win. So, of course, now this will be picked up by other state governments, and this could become a precedence or a formula for winning elections. However, we've seen in 2024 that despite all the schemes and BJP claiming 25 crore Labharthis, the BJP did suffer. So it may not be the ultimate weapon to win elections, let's say, but in the medium term, different parties and state governments could adopt this method.
Yes.
And of course, this has the fiscal costs, as we have been discussing.
That's very well put, Amitabh Tiwari. Thanks all very much for being with us on Left, Right and Center this evening. This is always, you know, an extremely fascinating debate. But of course, as we are saying in that band as well, it is time to teach perhaps our netas some sort of fiscal prudence as well, as that certainly needs to be one of the cornerstones of at least our poll manifestos. That's all the time that we have on Left, Right and Center this evening. Thanks so much for watching. Good night.